This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
You need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
This Day in History is back with you here on lineupmedia.fm, brought to you by audible.com and by amazon.com. Tony Hubert here, my co-host Armand Kachigian, as we bring you the dates and the events that have affected the world that we live in, all occurring on January the 6th. How are you this fine day?
You're speaking to me?
Yes, you.
Yes, I thought you meant that was a rhetorical question to our audience.
I hope the audience is doing well.
I'm doing fine. It's a little cold and snowy out there. Love it. No such thing as global warming.
Okay. Yeah, you've established that.
We will discuss that.
No, you've established that. So, what has happened on this day throughout history? We have about four things that we feel have affected and continue to affect the world that we live in today. Before we get to those, let's tell you what happened on this date, January the 6th. In 1017, can you pronounce this for me?
I guess it's Canute.
Canute the Great.
I've seen it spelled differently, too. I've seen it C-A-N-U-T-E.
It's Old English.
I guess.
Old English.
Okay.
But he's crowned the King of England.
Good for him.
In 1066, Harold Godwinson.
Godwinson. Harold, talked about this character yesterday.
Harold II. He is crowned King of England.
Didn't turn out well.
It did not. In 1066, a lot of things seemed to happen all over the place in 1066.
To him, yeah.
Well, no, just 1066 seemed to be a real good year for history.
Well, that book by Bill Bryson, I believe, 1066 and all that.
Yes.
Pretty good book.
Okay.
It's funny. It makes kind of
you should
light
look for,
of history.
There you go. First book recommendation of the day, Amazon.com, 1066.
There will be more.
Yeah. From Bill Bryson. I think he wrote a short history of everything.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Did you read that one?
Yes. I've read that.
Mm-hmm. I have not. I had never finished it. Sorry. Yeah,
it's didn't. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. 1492. You're going to have to explain this to me some.
I read it too.
The Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, famous for the funding of a little expedition, they enter Granada, and that completes the Reconquista.
Yeah, I assume by that reconquering, that's for Spanish for reconquering. I guess they took it from the Moors because that was the last bastion of the Moors in Spain, I believe.
And Spain is back to completely.
Right. Well, Catholic, yeah.
I won't say completely Spanish, but...
Yeah, and then we have the Spanish Inquisition, which is a lot of fun.
Nobody forgets.
You better not.
The Spanish Inquisition.
Do that at your own peril.
In 1540, a lady named Anne of Cleves, she got married on this date.
We've already discussed this.
And who did she marry? Well, she married... Henry VIII, I am.
Right. You remember the little jingle, of course.
You taught me this good little jingle on how to remember the wives, the six wives of Henry VIII. Okay, I don't remember.
Divorced.
Beheaded.
Died.
Divorced. Beheaded. Died.
Survived.
Survived. There was the play.
So this one was divorced.
Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.
Right. One was number four, divorced, never consummated.
Do they know it's never consummated?
Oh, yeah, because he couldn't stand her as soon as he saw her. He called her his Flanders mare.
That's it.
Remember Holbein or
but he
Holbein?
Did not even one night in the...
No, they played cards.
They played cards?
Yeah, they played cards, and apparently she took him for some money, too, and he didn't like that
either. On their wedding night, they played
card
cards?
Player. Yeah, didn't you? Doesn't everyone play cards on their wedding night?
Well, afterwards.
Yeah, no kidding. That's the 30 years after. But anyway, they actually got to be good friends with him. Acted, later on, she acted more or less like a sister to him, and he took good care of her. She, for the rest of her life, she she's been in England, and had a pretty soft. Oh, you know, and
not a bad gig considering what the others went through.
You gotta be kidding, man. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Okay, 1661 in the English Restoration, the fifth monarchist, well, they unsuccessfully attempt to seize control of London, England.
Interesting guys, these fifth monarchists. The first, there were supposed to be four rulers before this. Babylon, then the Persian Empire, then the Greeks and the Romans, and this was supposed to be the fifth coming. And it helped, you know, that all these tragedies were coming. Apparently, these religious sects were springing up all over the place, and these guys thought, they called themselves King Jesus. That's why they wanted to, on behalf of King Jesus, they wanted to take over London. They were led by a guy named Thomas Venner.
Venner.
Yeah, V-E-N-N-E-R.
Doesn't even sound English.
And, it was English the way he died. Wow. They it didn't succeed, and, you know, our favorite method of
drawn and quartered
execution. Yeah, hanged, drawn, and quartered, him and a few of his buddies. But, you know, people started believing it because then you had the Great Fire not too long after this.
5 years
and
later.
The plague. Yeah, so they thought, yeah, maybe there's something to this. And, of course, the big year, even back then.
1666.
Right, they thought that's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Didn't turn out
Come
that
on.
Way. Yep, but that was,
you know, look,
they thought it'd be second coming.
When 2666 rolls around, it'll be all anarchy again.
Okay, I'll let you know. We'll still be on the air. We're not going anywhere.
Armand's not.
Not me.
I'll be long of dirt
nap
by then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta take better care of yourself.
I have no plans to stick around that
long.
I'm
freezing my head.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you and Ted Williams.
The Neptune Society.
In 1853. Now, here's an event I'd never heard about.
Yeah, I don't know.
I found it interesting, so I just want to mention it.
Yeah, we've mentioned this. Yeah.
But Franklin Pierce and his family, president-elect.
Right.
Not even sworn in because, of course, March inaugurations back then.
Right, March,
okay?
Right.
Not sworn in. His family, they're involved in a train wreck in Andover, Massachusetts, and Pierce's 11-year-old son, Benjamin, will perish in that train
wreck. We talked about this when we had our little talk about handsome Frank Pierce,
yes,
kid from New Hampshire, the only president. Yeah, his son was decapitated.
Ugh, brutal.
Right in
so
front
sad.
Of him and his wife. Yep.
All right, 1907 in Italy, in Rome to be specific, a lady opens a school and a daycare centering on the working class people.
Schools pretty much are just daycare. Indoctrination.
Her name was Maria Montessori.
Okay. Apparently she's got a different way of teaching.
She does.
Okay.
She did.
I guess it works because it's very
popular.
Well, it's still in
use today.
Absolutely.
How would you have preferred to have been taught as a youngster? Would you have been
self-taught?
Okay,
as
well,
all geniuses are.
They leave you a lot to your own devices at Montessori. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you would have really prospered from it.
Do you think I could be even better than I am now?
Maybe you would have indulged what really interested you the most instead of sitting through 50 minutes a day of maybe what held very little interest for you.
Right.
Now, being the Renaissance man you are, I think perhaps everything was of a bit of interest.
Yeah.
But you might have liked to explore some other things a bit more instead of glossing over them.
You didn't send your kids to this, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No. Instead of glossing over them and just moving on, which is what we do. So, like, for instance, if you're a child, 5 years old to 10 years old, say, and let's say you really get fascinated by something. Well, in school today, you'd have to then kind of go do that on your own time.
Yeah.
Well, this gives you the option to really, really indulge, really get in and learn how you learn and what you want to learn about, you know, more so.
Okay, if you say so.
Yeah, I don't know all the ins and outs.
Sounds like it makes sense.
I don't know all the ins and outs of Montessori.
Yeah, I don't.
But I do know people who have gone to Montessori schools at an early age and who have also sent their children. We have one here that we work with. The second smartest person in this office.
Ooh, wow.
Well, according to you, because according to you, you're
Do we have an official ranking here?
We did. We gave everybody a test, and the two geniuses actually failed it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, but, I know. I may be the end of the line now.
Mr. Lakin was Montessori educated.
Yes, and he rhapsodizes about how great it was.
Yeah.
And he's going to send his kids to it. So I guess
there you
that's
go.
The ultimate
in
testimony.
1912, New Mexico admitted as state number 47.
Right, and we went over this later. I think 1912, that same year, Arizona was 48. Yep.
Do we really need New Mexico and Arizona? Can't we just combine?
Yeah.
You know, I have a thing, Armand, where I – like I'm kind of
how do you have the four corners without them?
Well, you just have one corner.
That's not a corner then.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
It's just a yes. point. I think there's too many states.
Okay.
I do.
I think there's too many unions. There should be more states and less union, as in none. Secession, baby. Break them up.
Break them up.
Break them up.
What do you want us to be, a little European
That's
conclave?
That's right, Balkanize.
Oh, geez.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that worked out well.
Sure it did.
Yeah, really. No.
Well, if it wasn't the Balkans, it would have been fine. How about were you against the Russian USSR breaking up? Look, that was undesirable to you?
Yeah, it's not into that tiny of a constituency. I know you're Armenian, and Armenia is not necessarily a large geographic country.
It was better for everybody that it broke up.
Yeah, because you're coming out of communism.
Oh, okay.
We're not coming out of communism here.
Okay.
Or socialism.
I don't know about that.
I'm just saying. Do we need a South Dakota and a North Dakota?
No, we need a...
We need a Dakota.
We need a central... We need a central area. We need a western states. We need a...
Do we need Massachusetts, Connecticut,
no,
Rhode
New
Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire? No,
right.
that state should be called New England.
Okay.
I can get you down to 41 states in a heartbeat.
No, I can get you down to about four different sections that all should all be their own countries. I can go even further than that. What's your objection to the states if you don't want them to be more independent?
Over-representation.
Absolutely.
Over-representation.
How do you cure that? You break up the whole damn country. Then everybody's represented better. Right.
Okay.
Well, you've heard of the European Union. What's the difference?
Yeah. Well,
they've been striving to do this. That's what they want to do.
Yeah.
And we're much more. Our situation, of course, is much more conducive to that. It's more opposite because we're the same people with the same language. We have the same currency.
I think
same mutual defense like NATO. Other than that, you have different legislation.
We certainly have a lot more commonality. But
not that much commonality where we should all be ruled by one federal government.
Yeah, but you're going federalist on me again.
I don't want, right. Exactly.
You don't have to go federalist on me.
In this
country,
you do.
We just need to reduce some states. That's it.
We need to reduce the federal government and keep it localized.
Yeah, and if you do,
localized government.
Maybe if you reduce the number of states, the feds would be getting their hands out a little more and more.
Don't count on it.
To your point,
I don't
get
think
it
so.
Down to you can get it down to four or five. I'm telling
you're
you
you're never
right
going to get that proportional representation you want unless you break up this union, and you know that. I don't know how we what do we what's
I don't know why
on,
10%
oh,
of
Mexico.
Our, I don't know why 10. Well, this is my why do 10% of our senators come from an area
it
where
do,
no one lives?
It doesn't make sense. Right, exactly. So make that a different country, just like California.
No, or how about this?
How about
Bureau of Land Management?
Get rid of it.
Just no.
What do we need that for?
Just put it under that department. It doesn't need to be a state.
Oh, okay, sure. The federal government owns like 40% of the land west of the...
Good, own it all then.
Great. Oh, wonderful. That's your solution?
It's better than 10% of my Senate being controlled by a bunch of...
Okay, well then if you know, like I said, but
again, to be fair, my same argument goes about New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. 10% of the senators in the United States come from that little area as well. Flip whole thing. One state. Cured.
No. Get rid of it as a country. Make it its own country. Then you're cured.
All right. 1929. Wow.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know this happened back in 1929. Mother Teresa arrives in Calcutta, India, and she begins her work among India's poorest and sick people.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that's going to be really unpopular.
Ocho and I have had this debate. It's his claim that she was Armenian. I don't know. He found some obscure.
Oh, really?
I thought she was Albanian, but apparently she was just, I don't know where the hell she's born, but I always thought Albania claims her.
I think Ocho, the host of Ocho Man's Behind the Eight Ball.
Right.
We've talked about this before and looked into it.
Were you in on that conversation?
I think there was, and I think there's some legitimate claim to Armenian descent.
All right. Well, anybody. Everybody says she's.
But everybody.
What's her real name? Gwangju or something like that? That's some unpronounceable name, her real name.
She has been beatified
Agnes
already.
Gwangju.
Okay.
Right. And here again, what's the difference? Now, I had to look this up.
Between beatified and canonized?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what it is, because I looked it up today, because I was looking up Joan of Arc.
Right.
Apparently, if you're beatified, you have like the a local area can pay homage to you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're canonized,
people
can make statues.
You're a saint.
Yeah, you're a saint. And, you know, the entire Catholic Church
reveres you
and honors you. So I think it's
now,
more or less.
You know, she is not without criticism.
No, well, who is? Who isn't?
No, no. I mean, there's serious criticism on a lot of and a lot of Christians saying, yes, she did administer to the poor.
Yeah.
But she also felt that it was fine for people to be poor. She wasn't really trying to prevent poverty or help alleviate poverty as she was
just.
But
how are you going to do that?
Everybody should strive to help alleviate poverty. That is a mandate that we should all have.
Well, that's here. Well, when we get to the Four Freedoms speech, I think we'll address that.
You can address it. But anyway, she started on this date, January the 6th, 1929. 1930, this is kind of interesting. The first diesel engine automobile makes a trip and completes it. Fairly long trip for 1930. Indianapolis, Indiana, all the way to New York City in a diesel.
Yeah.
1950, the United... this is great. This is... Armand, this is right up your alley. The United Kingdom recognizes the People's Republic of China, better known as...
Communist China? Is that what you're talking about?
Taiwan.
Oh, is that what it is?
People's... The Republic of China severs diplomatic relations with the UK in response. You're out.
Does that make sense? All right.
Yeah, you have the... You have the two countries.
People's Republic of China, Taiwan, Formosa, whatever you want to call
right?
it.
Right. Okay. The island is Formosa. The country is Taiwan.
All right.
I don't know why they...
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about. Okay.
That's still a source of friction to this day.
Oh, yeah.
1974, in response to the 73 oil crisis, daylight savings time commences nearly 4 months early.
And this was a disaster.
In the United States. Yeah. I have no recollection of this.
I do.
Because I'm 3 years old. So tell me what?
Walking to school in the dark.
In
and
the
people
dark.
Were getting hit. And there were bus accidents and everything. I remember that. I remember distinctly. I was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade.
Old Jerry Ford really let Nixon.
Seriously, Nixon. At 8 a.m. it this had is, to be pitch black. Then,
yeah,
right?
Well, of course. Yeah. This was Nixon's, solution to the oil crisis.
And how was this going to help oil?
First of all, I don't think there's ever been any real solid evidence that any daylight savings time helps anything, you know, as far as saving any energy or making things better for people.
No, it's just a way to enjoy the summer hours with more light after you get off work. That is how I always perceived it. If they're trying to sell that as something else, that's hogwash.
I don't know. I think I'd rather have the daylight earlier.
It depends who you are.
Yeah, right.
Now,
that's
for
what I'm
the
saying.
Majority of
it's
working
subjective.
Exactly. Ask a farmer.
Yeah. Farmer wants it in the morning, I would think.
Yeah, he'd like it then because guess what? The cows and chickens are getting up.
Well, there you go. Who needs it? I mean, it's just stupid.
But once you have, again, the 8-hour workday, let's go back to yesterday and Henry Ford.
Yeah.
Okay. Instituting that 8-hour workday. What generally happens, this is how I've lived my adult life. I go to sleep, I wake up, I get ready for 15 minutes, half an hour later, I'm at work.
Okay.
So, for me, daylight savings time coming in the summer months when the temperatures are warmer, it's nice to have it because...
In the Northern Hemisphere.
In the Northern Hemisphere, right. It's nice to have it because that's more time I can spend outside after I get home from work at 5, 5:30. I have a good 3 to 3.5 hours where we live. In some sections, depending on where you live in a time zone, like Louisville, Kentucky, right on the edge of a time zone.
Yeah.
It'll be light till 10 o'clock at night there.
But, you know, in this day and age,
you ever been to
as if darkness prevents anything. We play baseball. What do you do that you can't do? I mean, you're just saying, I enjoy the sunlight more. Well,
basically,
what activities can you not do?
It's not for
I don't know.
For
in
growing
this day and
up
age,
playing baseball, it was nice.
Okay, yeah, the kids nowadays really.
But see, everyone has a lighted field now.
Yeah, well, everyone has Facebook now. Nobody's playing baseball, so it's just totally ridiculous.
You know, but we only had one lighted field.
In fact,
field.
Why don't you just make it half an hour and split the difference?
We only had one lighted field when I grew up.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But things have changed so much. Nobody
they
plays
have.
Anytime.
Yeah.
At high noon, nobody's playing baseball. All right.
All right, 1994.
Now, this is a big. This should have been on your big one.
Well,
big
it didn't
list.
Change the world we live in.
Yeah, kind of.
God, it was. Well, it did.
Celebrity boxing.
It
sure.
did. It did change reporting on. Just
I guess. I remember this.
On non-news.
Okay.
It was
it's
news.
Fun. It's fun.
It's fun.
It's one of those fun things.
If you can get called being clubbed in the knee, fun.
Yeah, I think everybody knows. Everybody our age or older knows.
The U.S. Figure Skating Championships being held in Detroit, Michigan. Nancy Kerrigan. Gets clubbed in the knee and later proven to be arranged by Tanya Harding's.
Right. And was it her boyfriend? Was his name Galooly?
Jeff Galooly. Yeah, he's great since name. Changed his name to Jeff Stone.
That's the name of a guy should be club. See, now that's not
but
the
he
name
didn't do the club
of an ambassador to the UN he or one a, of our guys, attorney no, general or anything no, like that, no, or CIA
no.
director.
No,
that's
well,
the name
CIA,
of a guy that whacks somebody.
Exactly.
Jeff Galooly. Yeah. Good name.
Now, he didn't do the whacking.
Right. What was the other
He had
other
a big guy coming
right,
to do
right,
the
he hired that.
Yeah,
right.
hired
this
the
is
guy.
Like the third generation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
that
then
was fun, though. For
all hell broke loose.
And then remember Tanya at the Olympic trials and her skates were all screwed up and she had a tire shoe
oh,
and fell
cried.
Down and made a fool of herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I saw her in celebrity boxing. She actually
acquitted
herself well.
She was on the undercard to a Mike Tyson fight in Memphis, Tennessee
oh,
that
okay.
I covered.
Right.
And it was
who'd she fight?
Oh,
actual that was an actual
yes,
fight.
Oh, actual
okay.
sanctioned.
The, you know,
fight.
They hit each other with pillows.
No,
more.
This
or less.
Was sanctioned bout.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was.
I'll bet she'd be a great lay. What a face. Just we're talking subjective things today, so that's my opinion.
Yeah, well, here's what people
one.
Forget about her. She really was a good athlete.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well,
her
you don't
leaping,
get to her level,
her leaping
right.
ability
well,
in skating.
Away from her.
I mean, even
I guess Kerrigan was better though. I guess
I think in terms of yeah. overall, but I mean, in terms of doing the big, powerful jumps and everything,
yeah, she had those big thighs.
Tanya was yeah. was an impressive athlete. Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Gave her a due. That's the greatest homage I can give to a person.
There you
no,
have it.
She'd be
all
great
right.
lay. I can't say anything better than that.
This lay in history by Armand Kachigian.
Yes, let's change the title.
The all right, halfway point of the show, we tell you who was born on this date.
Yeah, this is a big one.
We got a lot of nice ones. I got some that I'm going to surprise you with today.
Okay, surprise
we're going to run through them here. Born January 6th, 1367, Richard II. 1412, the martyr, the saint.
Jean de Pucelle.
Joan of Arc.
Yeah. Okay, well, made her bones at the Siege of Orléans. She was... I think she was 17 or 18
years old.
Yeah, born in Lorraine, France.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she got the calling. Apparently, Jesus told her go fight the English. You know, maybe that's what they said to Hitler too. Maybe he heard the calling too. But if somebody,
oh, no.
Everyone wants to fight the English.
I don't want to digress here, but
no, I was just joking.
Hitler did think he had a
probably.
Inspired
but he
calling.
He didn't want to fight the English.
To
want to fight the Russians.
To rule the Germans.
Well, he
yes.
wanted to fight the Bolsheviks. But anyway. She was actually tried. You know why she was tried as a heretic and not,
not a traitor.
Traitor, yeah. Or a witch. I mean, because she was a virgin. Because and I didn't know this. Because apparently, to be a witch, you have to have intercourse with the devil. Did you know that?
No.
So if you're a virgin,
I thought you just had to be spells
well,
and
in those
whatnot.
Days, yeah, apparently, you have to have actual intercourse with the devil. Which
how do you think
maybe Tanya Harding's a witch?
How do you think Joan of Arc would have been classified gender wise today?
A trans? You think?
I don't know. Possibly.
No, I think apparently she just wore men's clothing because it protected her
out of necessity,
and she didn't want to get raped. She knew that she thought if the English catch me, they're gonna rape me.
Yeah,
so it'll be a lot tougher if I'm in my armor.
Right.
So that was
so basically
that's
a body,
what she said at her trial.
A body chastity belt, in effect.
Right. Yeah. Because that's what she was accused of being a cross dresser. And
yeah.
that was grounds back then when things were more just to be burned at the stake. But she was not a witch because
no,
isn't that
she
interesting?
Was not.
So she's just
that
a heretic.
That is interesting.
I thought that was fascinating. And of course,
I got to tell you, the interest, the fascination with virginity throughout history,
yeah,
to me is mind numbing.
That's a big deal.
Why?
Well, because chastity was one of the graces. It was supposed to be chaste.
No, being chaste is a
As
virtue.
For a woman, not
it's
for a man.
It's a virtue.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
But Armand, you could marry a very chaste woman and be having...
I'm not talking for men. It's for women.
Oh, come on.
It doesn't apply to men.
Oh,
men
sure.
can do whatever they want.
Now, I
do want to say one thing, though.
On Joan?
Yeah. Not necessarily on Joan, but I think probably the greatest, which is I think it's been called by the AFI and all these people, the greatest single performance in a film.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see this. It's on YouTube, I think. It's called The Passion of Joan of Arc.
I have not seen this.
Oh, it's a silent movie. It's made in 1928. And this gal's name, they call her just by her first name. I think her first name is Maria, but they never use it. It's just Falconetti.
Falconetti.
And she was actually a comedian. So they get her. She did a couple of short, you know, French films,
okay.
comedies.
Sure.
Somehow they thought she looked like Joan of Arc. And I'll tell you what, this film, she's Joan of Arc, and they really tortured her and stuff. They really drew blood on her and stuff like this, really put her through hell. And
Where's she the never made another movie. Committee?
It's 1928.
Oh, that's true. They don't exist.
Yeah. And it was the French. Here again, we know the French. They're all sadists. So they, they put her through the hell. And here's the funny, well, I don't know if it's funny, but ironic. The guy loses, the director loses the print.
Oh,
so he's
got to
make the film basically from all the outtakes,
which
he thought were like second best. But anyway, it's quite a performance. She never made another movie.
I can see why.
Yeah, they shaved her head and they just beat the hell out of her and tortured her.
All right, also born on this date, 1874, January the 6th, Fred Niblo.
Yeah, silent film director.
Very good.
One of my favorites. He did, the guy directed Greta Garbo. He directed Valentino, Blood and Sand.
Wow.
Did Mark of Zorro in The Three Musketeers with Douglas Fairbanks. And he was one of the founders of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Very
Academy.
Good.
There were only 36 of them. He was one of them. Fred Niblo. He worked with our friend Thomas Ince, who we discussed the other day for a while. But sound wasn't good to Fred, and he kind of, like the rest of them, kind of fell off the face of the earth and died in 43 in relative obscurity.
Right. Okay, also born on this date, 1882, big one. Politician, Speaker of the House, big Speaker of the House.
Longest serving.
Sam Rayburn, born on January the 6th.
Yeah, big time friend of John Nance, Cactus Jack Garner, Roosevelt, Texas guy, 4th District. Roosevelt's first vice president. Also good buddies with Lyndon B. Johnson's father, Sam, I think his name was. And Lyndon always looked up to Sam Rayburn and said, I'm going to be Speaker of the House someday too. And God damn it, he made it.
Well, he did. 1902. Helmet Poppin' Dick.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I just,
where'd you throw this? You just like the name?
The name.
Okay,
yep.
That's, you're degrading this show.
He's a physician. He's German.
Okay, who about this next guy? Another obscure.
Well, Kid Chocolate. I know that.
Practically.
Well, Cuba produces great boxers.
I know that, but this one?
And 1910, Kid Chocolate is born.
I think the greatest was Teofilo Stevens.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to agree on that? Okay.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Well, what's so special about this guy?
He's a great Cuban boxer. He's you know, but again, hell of a name.
Okay.
When you get to go by Kid Chocolate.
And now we got a hell of a nose coming up.
Oh, we do. 1912, this date, the man who, for my generation, really, Armand, is known for St. Jude's Children's Hospital.
Yeah, I give my $20 a month to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a charity I donate to.
That's Danny Thomas, the actor, the comedian.
It's well worth it.
And really, first and foremost, the humanitarian.
Now, you of course, look at me and think, you know, a savage, brutalized by other people's pain, a doctor who actually has no
bedside manner.
Yeah, thank you. And absolutely no compassion for people in distress. But, well, I can't watch a commercial with kids. I had to give them money.
Danny's, he passed away in 1991.
Yeah, he's been going along with it. Make room for daddy, right? Wasn't that Danny Thomas?
Yeah. I never watched his movies as a kid.
No.
But I knew he was impactful.
But he was the producer of Dick Van Dyke Show, probably my all-time favorite show.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yep.
1913, Loretta Young is born. I knew you would like that.
Yeah, she won the Academy Award for...
You got me.
Farmer's Daughter, 1947.
Ooh,
and she got knocked up by Clark Gable.
Who didn't?
Yeah, they were making Call of the Wild together. Had a daughter by
Clark
Gable. Yeah, she got the call.
How many kids do you think Clark Gable had?
Not as many probably as Errol Flynn and Gary Cooper. I think those guys were... Clark Gable more or less kept it in his pants more than those guys did.
All right. 1925. Now, this one's important. I'm going to ask you some questions because I love
this guy.
The American engineer and businessman... He is the founder of the DeLorean Motor Company. John DeLorean is born.
Right.
It's not that he founded DeLorean or got put in prison or his cocaine habit.
Right. Those I knew about.
It's the fact of what he did, the innovation with General Motors in the 1960s.
That's correct. Yeah.
He basically is the founder of the muscle car.
Yeah. That I think I knew.
And here's how they did it. There were certain sort of production rules that GM had in place and about, you know, what you could, you know, you put at the engine and you know, what they wanted to do. John DeLorean and his team at Pontiac at the time. This is why Pontiac gets credit for this. They dropping a big honking engine into a midsize car. So the Tempest, I don't know if you remember
the Tempest
as a kid.
Yeah.
The Tempest is what becomes the Pontiac GTO. Eventually, you could get a Tempest GTO, and then it became just GTO. So by 1965, 66, but they really weren't allowed to do this. DeLorean just went ahead and did it anyway.
I like guys
and
like that.
And it was such a success that the GM officials couldn't backtrack, and they had to go, and then the muscle car revolution was out of the box and running. But DeLorean, I mean, what he did in terms
of performance. So can we call him the father of the muscle car?
I like to. I mean, I know there's others. You know, Fred Mitchell is another one. There's a bunch of GM guys who really, in terms of cranking up the horsepower on cars, you know, but DeLorean's at that vanguard that not only did it change American consumers in the male mindset of wanting the car,
yeah,
you know, but it also changed the insurance game.
Ah.
And it also changed the gas mileage game. Because by the early 1970s, with the oil crisis coming, again, 1973 oil crisis,
yeah,
and with the insurance rates going up because kids are killing themselves in these things, they had to kind of put an end to now the muscle car area.
Right.
Now it's back.
Yeah,
and it's strictly the domain of guys my age, 40 years and older, right, buying 700 horsepower.
Right. Guys that are undersized and have penis envy.
Well, those guys
that
buy
the psychological basis for the muscle car?
No, they buy Porsches.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, they buy that has always been the psychological basis.
We're going to have to consult Freud on that one.
Freud would have had a field day with the muscle.
You've got a problem with your mother.
1926, Ralph Branca born.
Just died not too long. Yeah, last
did.
Month?
I talked to him a few times, okay, setting him up as interviews on radio shows.
Now, do you think they really had his signals down?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
They had that guy in center field, right?
And,
telling
and when
you still have to hit the ball.
Okay, no, and Branca always conceded that.
Yeah.
But after it became evident towards the end of his life that Thompson was probably signaled, he publicly stated, in that situation, who is jumping all over a high and inside fastball?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what. So I believe Thompson had an idea.
We're talking about the shot
heard around
the world.
Now, a lot of hitters don't want to know what's coming.
Okay.
They'd rather just read and react. They're more comfortable.
I'd like to know.
You get a little jumpy when, you know, you get a little tense. You kind of get out of your rhythm if you know what's coming.
All right. If you say
some
so.
Hitters say that. Other hitters,
I don't play
you, know,
base.
You know.
I'm a wrestler. But do you know what famous scene played while that was on the radio?
Which radio?
Well, it was on a car radio in a movie, a famous scene in a very famous movie.
On the waterfront.
No. Russ Hodges is actually doing his play-by-play.
Well, you know why that one is the one?
What do you mean?
So The Giants call of it, Hodges,
yeah,
he goes quite it happened to be taped by a lady in Brooklyn. They saved
right,
no studio
right,
tape.
Right, no, right, there were no, right, exactly.
And the Dodgers call of it, which would be Red Barber.
Okay.
I don't even know it was there. The other call of it, and I've never been able to verify this, is that KMOX in St. Louis had gone out to the playoff game and sent Harry Carey to do the game. But I'm not sure when they say do the game, if they meant play-by-play or just call in those reports.
Yeah,
so I don't know that a Harry Carey call.
The Russ Hodges broadcast was actually playing during the toll booth scene in Godfather.
Oh, you're kidding.
Where Sonny Corleone.
I never
you know
knew
how that,
that.
Yeah, that was. So,
I never
so we know
knew
the
that.
Exact date Sonny Corleone got wasted.
On October
whatever it was,
first,
1951, right?
1951. Yeah,
whatever, October 1st?
I think
you
so.
Say so.
Or 1950.
But that Russ Hodges was playing on the radio.
Wow. That's a good.
Yeah, that's a trivia.
Okay. Other birthdays real quick. 1928. Help me with the pronunciation.
Cappuccino.
Not a coffee.
She
but
was
she was in
actress,
the Pink Panther,
beautiful
right?
woman.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah, and also she was in North to Alaska with Ernie Kovacs and John Wayne.
1930, Vic Tabak born.
Yeah, Alice's Restaurant or Alice.
Mel's Diner.
And a lot of. And he was good on that Star Trek episode. Remember where they're gangsters?
No.
He made one Star Trek
oh,
episode.
Oh, he is the
the gangster. Tony Caruso was Oxmix, and he's what I forgot his name, but he was the rival gangster.
1937, January 6th, Lou Holtz born.
Oh, you forgot E.L. Doctorow.
Oh, E.L. Doctorow, that's
great
a big
author.
Time.
Billy Bathgate.
Ragtime.
Ragtime, yeah, Ragtime, yep. Absolutely.
1937, Lou Holtz. 1946, Sid Barrett.
Pink Floyd. They kicked him out, though, didn't they?
Well, he just quit.
Yeah, but they didn't. He wanted to get back or something. I don't think they let him back in.
You got to remember, whatever he was going through.
Yeah, a lot.
It was
demons.
A lot. And
very
but he would be
guy,
on stage,
though.
And he wouldn't be playing.
I could do that.
Right. I mean, you know, but the whole, you know, the Wish You Were Here?
Yeah.
That's written for him.
Good song.
And
I like Pink Floyd. One of my
and
favorites.
Then he lived with his mother.
Well, so did I.
As they went.
Only until I was 48.
Well, okay. But as they went on to basically, you know, this world superstardom.
Oh, damn right.
He's just at home with mom.
Good guy.
1955. I like this guy. Yeah, he's cute. Rowan Atkinson.
Mildly amusing.
You know him as Mr. Bean.
Yeah.
1969. This guy I think is fabulous. Norman Reedus. He is currently on The Walking Dead as okay. Daryl. And 1982, I think this is a very good actor. He won the Academy Award already. Eddie Redmayne, who was in The Danish Girl, was awesome.
Didn't see that.
The first time I ever saw him was in De Niro's The Good Shepherd. He plays the son of the CIA guy who basically gets co-opted by a foreign agent.
Happy birthday to him.
Yeah. Happy birthday. All right. Don't forget Amazon.com and Audible.com sponsor the show. Whenever we have a book recommendation,
of course,
we send them your way through those two sources. The big ones we talk about here, 1721, how it affected the world we live in today. Well, in 1721, a little something called the South Sea Bubble
and
occurs,
I brought this
Armand.
One up because you know me and economics. We're going to talk about economics and science today. A big one on okay, so it's 1721. You're King George, right? You're fighting wars left and right everywhere. War of the Spanish Succession, etc. How do you make a – you're in debt up to your ass. How do you make a little money, huh? Well – you give a monopoly to some company that wants to establish trade with the Spaniards. You give them a special license to trade with the Spaniards in South America, right? Ostensibly to trade wool and flax and fleece, which we make here in England, for gold and jewels and silver, right? And, that's going to work out great, isn't it? So say you're some investor in England or some guy that's – England at this time, you're doing pretty well. You're industrializing a little bit. People are getting actually making some money. What do you do with your money? There's nothing to invest. You can't invest in the East India Company because that's limited. There's only like 500 investors, and nobody, they're not taking anybody else. So you start investing your money in the South Sea, right? The South Sea Company, and that's what you do. So basically, the only thing that really worked in this whole thing was the thing that you can always trade slaves. Right. But the rest of this wool and flax and everything after a few years, actually, it's only about a year and a half, starts in 1720, early 1720. And in the summer of 1720, these guys that are in charge of this realize this stuff's worthless. There's nothing you can do with all this stuff. But here's the thing. These guys were great at public relations. They didn't have anything worth trading. But they had a great-looking office with plush chairs and nice pictures. And they couldn't wait to invest in this stuff. And it was worthless. And, of course, kept piling on. When these guys finally bailed out themselves, everything went to hell. It went broke. People that were putting in thousands of pounds, worthless. Absolutely worthless. Great bubble. At the same time, a guy named John Law thought this is a great idea. So he goes to France, starts his own, what they call the Mississippi bubble. This is even better. You've heard of this?
Yes.
Yeah. Basically,
getting everyone to invest in the trade routes.
This is even better. Instead of just gold, we're going to trade gold and silver for paper currency.
For paper.
Great idea. So they all both went belly up. And these are our bubbles. And of course, all under the auspices of what? Government. Because what happens when you're King George and you're up to your ass in debt, what can you do with this? You got to monetize it somehow. You make paper currency. And here's the nice thing about this bubble, which is even greater. Say you're one of these schmucks that invests £1,000 in this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. They entitled you. You don't have to pay it all at once. You can invest it in increments, but you can get loans on that £1,000, right, from other people at the full value. So maybe I put £100 in it, but I say I'm going to put £1,000 in it. So you can get loans up to that. So not only are you getting paper currency, because the king, basically what started, if people want to invest in this, because here's the problem. If King George owes you money, which he did, he owed these creditors, King George, you cannot transfer that credit to somebody else. It's yours. You're stuck with it. Okay.
Yeah. So royal debt was not a bearer bond.
It's not transferable.
Right.
Okay.
It's not a bearer bond.
Right.
You can't sign off the debt and turn it into
it's your debt from the king. Now, the king drops dead. The next king doesn't have to pay you.
Oh, jeez.
Right. It's gone. And you can't transfer it. That's why these people want to invest this money, which they didn't have anyway, into something. And then they increase it. Like, it's almost like fractional reserve banking.
Right.
And you got this bubble, so the whole thing. And here you go. It's all because government gets involved in the economy and screws everything up. And this is 50-something years before Adam Smith, of course.
Yeah, it is.
People were thinking, this is after the big tulip. The first bubble, of course, was the Netherlands and the tulips.
Tulip bubble.
That was a big one. But this was my favorite.
That's
bubble.
Your favorite bubble?
That's why
I
devoted so much time to
I'll
it.
Tell you what, Armand.
Don't invest in these bubbles. And don't take – if Queen Elizabeth comes knocking on your door and borrow money –
I'm not taking any notes from the Queen.
To buy dog food for her corgis, don't give her the money.
I'm sure you're already ticked off that when you get a British pound, it even has her face on it.
I don't have a problem with Queen Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Just don't take her credit.
Well, try not to if she comes around.
She's sick. I hope she's doing better.
She has a heavy cold, as it was described the other day. 1838, on January 6th, Alfred Vail. Well, he demonstrates something.
I have no idea what this is all about.
He demonstrates a system using dots and dashes. It's basically a demonstration of a forerunner to the telegraph and a forerunner to Morse code.
See, I never heard this poor guy didn't have a good PR guy like the South Sea Bubble.
Absolutely not.
South Sea Company, because I've never heard of him.
This is like the who's the Italian that invented
what were we talking about? This has happened.
It's happened a bunch of times where somebody invents something, they don't get the credit.
There was a guy that invented the phone before Alexander Graham Bell.
Right.
Yeah. Is that who you're talking about?
Because Italians will tell you, no, Graham Bell. This is the guy.
Right, right.
And it's not Marconi because that's right.
No.
1912. The German physicist. This is a nice one.
Yeah.
And this is important. He first presents his theory that...
Alfred Wegener.
He first presents his theory of continental drift.
Yeah, and he was laughed right out of the old geophysical society or whatever they had those days. Nobody believed him. Basically, what he does is he sees that, you know, certain fossils and plants and animals are similar in these continents, even though they're way far apart. And then he looks on a map and says, hey, you know, some of these continents look like a puzzle. You could put these things together. Well, lo and behold, he comes up with his theory of continental drift. Everybody, like I said, it was not accepted during his lifetime. The poor guy ends up being a laughing stock and dies up in Greenland, you know, boring ice holes or whatever the hell he was doing. Has a heart attack and drops dead in Greenland. But the basic theory is that the lithosphere, which is the upper mantle and the crust, the upper crust and the upper mantle and crust are not solid. Okay, they lie on the asthenosphere, which is this like plasticity to rocks, because our old friends, pressure and temperature, melt the rocks and make them more liquid or plastic. They're not liquid per se, but anyway, and these plates, which they're continental plates, which we're sitting on, and everybody is. There's oceanic, there's the Pacific plate, and of course is where they come together, where you have the Ring of Fire and all the volcanoes, etc.
Right.
And here's the problem with Wegener too. He couldn't come up with a mechanism for this. Basically, what his idea was, and it's wrong, is that these plates or the continents are plowing through, because at this time they thought the world was shrinking. That's why we're getting mountains. See, that was the theory. That's, you know, the mountains are coming because the world is actually shrinking. And the movement was from the world getting smaller.
I could see why he would draw that conclusion.
Well, he didn't. That's what everybody else thought. That was conventional thinking. And that he thought, it was shrinking. He agreed with that. But these continental plates were moving and plowing through each other like an icebreaker through ice. And that's how they moved. And everybody said, that can't be right. And
so
it wasn't.
And so they did come, later to, let me get the two types of sort of fault lines correct. You have a slip fault.
Yeah.
Sliding.
Right. Oh, there's all kinds of them.
You have a induction where one goes under.
Subduction.
The other.
There's several of them. There's all kinds of faults.
And you know, some continents.
What happens where these plates come together,
right.
Basically?
Some continental.
Ridges.
Right.
Some which continental, is what we're creatures of.
Yeah.
Continental ridge.
Continental ridge.
The Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's, they laughed the poor guy out of, and there you go. There's
but some continental plates technically are actually getting bigger as the as
yeah,
the plate
well, some
on
are
the
spreading
sea
out.
Is spreading.
Spreading, and the ridge, we have ridges in the Atlantic and things like that creates a ridge as they spread out and fall apart or move apart.
And they can track the movement of the plate.
Right. I mean, but now, do you know what it was called when all the continents were?
Pangaea.
Right, and the ocean?
No, I don't
Panthalassia.
Know. Panthalassia. Panthalassia.
Yeah, 200 to 300 million years ago.
Global ocean?
Yeah. That's right.
One global continent.
Right.
Pangaea.
And, of course, that had some profound effects on climate. 200 to 300 million
absolutely.
Years ago.
Well,
that
I
was
should
a Pangea.
Say absolutely.
Oh, speaking of which, you forgot my birthday today.
Yours?
No, not mine, but the one I added. Bjorn Lomborg.
Well, it's coming to it. Oh, no, I did forget.
Yeah, you
it.
Missed it.
1965, on this date, January 6th, Bjorn Lomborg, yes.
Yeah, read his books, Cool It, and The Skeptical Environmentalist. Now, this guy is not a scientist. He's a poli-sci guy. But what he's basically saying is, and I'm going to quote him, yes, there, global warming is real. It is man-made, but it is not the end of the world. And he's basically the guy that says, listen, he's an economist and a scientist, so a political scientist and social scientist, and he says all this furor over this. If you read his book, Cool It, and the Skeptical Environmentalist, he talks about like little things you can do to make a big difference. He's more concerned with clean water, malaria, AIDS, that sort of thing. Malnutrition,
yeah.
That this money that we're completely wasting on global warming could be much better spent. He's an economist, basically. He says mm-hmm. we can spend this money and save more lives.
Opportunity
and make more
cost is what he's saying to you.
Exactly. That's what he's talking about. So read his books, because the guy makes a lot of sense, and he does believe in global warming,
so check
which kind of makes him stupid.
So give me the title, the author
the skeptical,
and title. The
Bjorn
Skeptical
Environmentalist.
Environmentalist.
And Cool It.
And Cool It.
Reflections, I think. Reflections of a Skeptical Environmentalist.
So look for that at Amazon.com.
Bjorn Lomborg. I think they're both on him.
At Audible.com, where a free audio trial.
And keep an open mind.
Waiting for you. One more on the world that, the events that affect the world we live in today. 1949. A speech is given. The Four Freedom Speech.
No, 41.
41, sorry.
Yeah.
I can't even read my own writing. 1941, the Four Freedom Speech.
I hate this speech.
Is given on January the 6th. Now,
and the deliverer.
We're in World War II, but the United States is right. Not involved.
Yeah, but this is kind of his plea for us to, hey, listen, you isolationists, we got to make the world safe for, let's see, how does this go? It's go religion and freedom of worship, freedom from want, which is a great one. How the hell you do that? Freedom from fear. I mean, come on.
You will always
Roosevelt,
want, and someone
himself.
Will always find something to be afraid of.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
You'll you'll never have either.
Right. In other words, I'm God.
Utopia.
I'm Franklin Roosevelt, and only government can you be freedom from fear and want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's get in this war and kick the Germans' ass, and make everybody safe for democracy, which was
and that's the speech.
Wilson. Yeah. More BS from our favorite polio victim.
As we have four that affect the world we live in today, what would you vote for? Your South Sea bubble, the precursor to Morse code and the telegraph? Plate tectonics or your Four Freedom Speech?
You're asking me?
Yeah,
or
I'm asking
Wagner,
you.
Of course.
Really?
Yeah, it was a watershed. I mean,
it is a watershed scientific
this in
moment.
A way is just as, you know, is just as revolutionary as, you know,
I see, I
special
feel,
relativity.
I kind of feel compelled to say the same, but I'm debating with myself, you know, look, if we hadn't figured out continental drift, would it affect how I live today? I don't know.
All right, then what would? I don't know.
I think
the Morse code?
I think no. Well, communications is always important. You know,
well, the thing about the South Sea bubble is we didn't learn anything from it.
That's the problem.
If there were no more bubbles afterwards, we'd all said, wow, that was great.
That was
we
the
saved
one.
A lot of people, a lot
and
of misery.
We learned.
We
learned
shit.
Actually, I think maybe it has the inverse effect. Those who can profit from a bubble learn that, yeah, continuing to have bubbles is a good thing if you know what the hell's happening.
If you're the guy that's in the bubble before it boils.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with your plate tectonics. You and I are in agreement once again. How about that?
We got to cut that out.
Well, we try to argue.
Boring podcast.
No, it's fun.
All right, let's get to the deaths.
We go with who died.
One person.
As we close the show.
We revel in his death.
The first one, perhaps. 1919.
T-Rex.
On this date, the 26th president of the United States passes away. Now, he's out of office. He's not president at the time.
Thank God.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Not because he didn't want to be.
Yeah. Oh, he would have been happy to be. But Theodore Roosevelt, if you haven't read, you just mentioned it, Theodore Rex.
Yeah.
Edmund Morris has a trilogy of books about Teddy Roosevelt.
You know what really made this guy popular in the first place?
Teddy?
Yeah.
The Teddy
what really
Bear.
Made him a what really made him a name? The Teddy Bear. He was commissioner of New York, okay? Speaking of global warming, 1896, worst heat wave of all time hits New York. 11 straight days, 90 degrees plus, 90% humidity.
With all that, all that brick.
And here's the problem. Yeah, it didn't get any cooler at night.
Right.
So people are sleeping on their roofs or their fire escapes, rolling over and falling and killing themselves. So they have to open up Central Park and the other parks for people to sleep. because these people are falling off their roofs.
Well, did your parents or grandparents used to sleep in parks during the summer? Mine did.
Not in a park. We slept outside.
I remember sleeping on the porch. But that was just for fun, not because it was a necessity.
But it was hot. Yeah, I mean, at my grandma's house, she didn't have air conditioning, so we slept on the porch.
Well, my mother did too. Every summer, they slept on their front porch with the fans.
So it was 1896,
and all those tenement buildings holding all that heat.
Yeah, right. It's the middle of the city, which is obviously a heat island, which we'll call it now. Which is where you put the thermometers, of course, so you can say the globe is warming. And anyway, he being magnanimous as he was, he gave free ice to the people, and that saved some lives. And but they hated him, kind of, police commissioner, because he enforced the Sunday rule of no alcohol.
And that's no good.
They tried to bump him off with some letter bombs.
That's no good for anybody.
They didn't like him for that. His wife and wife and mother died on the same day. Yeah, I think it was 1888, Valentine's Day. That was a nice Valentine. Both of them.
Wow.
Yeah. He had a boxing injury. His left eye was practically blind. We all know he didn't go up San Juan Hill. He went up Kettle Hill. The first American to win the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, for the Russo-Japanese War negotiating. He couldn't keep his big mouth out of that. Speak softly, carry a big stick, West African. He also said, never hit a man unless it is absolutely necessary. But if you do hit him, put him to sleep. So that I have lived my
you
life.
Have,
that,
yeah,
that's
you
a good
do.
One. Okay,
you do
Teddy
like
was
one.
Right on that one.
1934, the great English footballer and manager, Herbert Chapman, passed away. I've seen some tributes, memorials in
Don't
place.
Know the guy.
But you're not a football fan.
Well, I like Eusebio. We talked about
him
yesterday.
Yeah. 1949, Victor Fleming passes away.
Yeah, he's the only director to have two films on the AFI top 10.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And?
Well, the other one should be obvious.
Gone with the Wind.
Right. Of course, he was one of four directors. We've gone over that.
Who gets the credit, though, again?
Fleming.
Fleming does. Okay.
But George Cukor, Sam Wood, and William Cameron Menzies all helped out. And he also contributed to Treasure Island, Captain's Courageous, and The Good Earth, one of my favorite movies. Yeah, he contributed to that, although he wasn't
there. They actually did a good job on The Good Earth converting
that locust swarm. They actually lucked out because they were going to cut that whole scene, but an actual locust swarm happened. They said, get the cameras, let's get
going.
That's
fabulous.
So they caught the locust swarm. It was like real locusts. Not like computer
generation. I always assumed they just got a thing and unleashed it.
No. There was an actual, they were going to just cut the whole scene.
So this is like Howard Hughes looking for clouds in Hell's Angels.
Right, exactly. That's
and
what
they
happened.
Got that
they
lucky.
Lucked out. Yeah, they lucked out. And he did Joan of Arc with Ingrid Bergman, since we're talking about Joan.
Oh, God, do I love
1948, and then had a heart attack and dropped dead of a couple weeks after that was completed. That was his last movie.
1993, January 6th, Dizzy Gillespie, the trumpet player, the singer-songwriter. I remember him from like being on the Tonight Show as a kid.
Always have the picture with the two.
His trumpet did that bend up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Famous picture, right?
And the cheeks, man.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
right. That's so
fabulous,
how I remember
man.
Him. Yeah.
And finally, in 2006, fine singer.
Velvety voice.
Velvety voice. Did a lot of promotional work for Anheuser-Busch and Budweiser.
I like his voice.
Lou Rawls passed away in 2006.
Hey, that's a good. You can get a chick with his voice, I think. A little Sinatra, a little Lou Rawls. That'll mellow him out.
Absolutely.
Apply them with alcohol. You're all set. You're in like Flynn.
All right, Armand, that'll do it for January 6th. Everybody enjoy your week, and we will be back with you when not the 7th, but not the 8th, but January 9th rolls around here on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.